Amazing information about demographics. Upside is the name of the book. Kenneth DeGrun back with us. We'll be back with him in a moment and right here on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with Ken Gronbeck. He also wrote a book called The Age Curve, How to Profit from the Coming Demographic Storm. And this latest one is called Upside, Profiting from the Profound Demographic Shifts Ahead. As a marketer, Ken, when you look at the possibilities that you have an increase in population, does that make the job of a marketer easier when you know you have more people in the pool?
Yep. And I don't mean to be so simplistic, but yeah, it's a, you know, I get to, I do about 60 presentations a year, you know, keynotes.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a ton. And so I live in airplanes and, but I get invited to do this prestigious presentation to the hospitality industry in the lower part of Manhattan. All the major hotels in the world. Google was there, American Express was there, all of, and you know, Hilton, Sheraton, and so forth. And I was told, Ken, you can't give your normal presentation to these folks. They're too smart. These are chief marketing officers from all over the world. They're $1 million salaries. So you're going to have to elevate your presentation. Well, I ignored that. And when I got to the presentation, they're all sitting around a big round table, and there was a lot of posturing. I could tell by the body language that they felt pretty good about themselves.
They were ready to jump on you, right?
No, they were ready to let me know that they're smarter than me.
Yeah.
And you know, so I'm not that smart. So I said, listen, before we start, I want to ask everyone one question. I said, what's the most important question in marketing? And that just goes back to what you just said, George. I said, what's the most important question in marketing? And we went around the room. And I said, here, let's start here with Hilton. And Hilton said, new products. We have to come up with new products. We're going to make our rooms smaller and our lobbies bigger. And there was a lot of discussion about that. And then other folks said, Google said, social media. We have to figure out how to reach Generation Y with social media. It's got to be as effective as standard media was. And we talked about that. And then other folks said, we got to get into the heads of Generation Y, psychographics. We need to understand exactly what they want, how they think. And they went all around the room, and it was variations of that. And when they were all done, I looked at them, and I said, nobody got it. And they looked at me like I had two heads. And I said, it's how big is your market, and is your market getting bigger or smaller?
Exactly.
And they were stunned because nobody ever thought about that, and nobody knew the answer to that. So,
and once you get that, then you know how to market, because of the pool, let's say, is there data that says the age of a person who would go and get a hotel room in a classy hotel?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
Can I give you another example?
Yeah.
Let me give you. You've heard of Levi Strauss?
Sure.
Levi jeans?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, 1998. I'm in my office now. I made my discovery, and I wasn't quiet about it, George. I published as much as I could, and I spoke as much as I could. I hadn't written my first book yet, but. 1998, I'm in my office, and I get my assistant comes running in. She said, it's Levi Strauss is on the phone. And I said, who? And she said, it's a chief marketing officer from Levi Strauss, and he's in San Francisco, and he's calling me, Ken Gronbeck, in Connecticut. I'm a little podunk agency. So I took the call, and I said, I'm flattered that you're calling. What can I do for you? And he said, listen, Ken, we're about to raise the price on Levi jeans from, they were selling for in the, you know, $30, $35 a pair to $70 a pair. He says, because we can't make them fast enough. And the demand is so high that we anticipate being able to sell them for the same price that we're going to sell them, that we're currently selling them for in Europe. And I said, that's cool. He said, but a strange thing is happening. It's happening suddenly. And I said, what? He said, well, our sales are going flat in some states, and there are actually states where sales are declining. Do we have a demographic issue? And I said, who's your customer? And he said, an 18 to 34-year-old man or woman. And I said, okay, what happens at 34 years old? Why do they stop buying your product? And he said, well, He said, most people are through buying clothes at 34 because they're married, and for the most part, they can't fit in our product anymore, which I thought was kind of funny. Yeah, so I said, okay. I said, you do realize you're a baby boomer product? And he said, of course we are. And I said, the last baby boomer was born 1964. And he said, yeah, okay. I said, add 34 years to that. What do you come up with? And he said, 1996. Is that right? Yeah, I believe that's right. And 1998, excuse me. And he says, well, what does that mean? I said, well, the last baby boomer just checked out of your hotel.
Based on what you They're gone.
They're gone. And he said, so what's going to happen? I said, you don't want to know. And he said, well, what about the generation right behind him? I said, too small. And he said, what about this huge generation Y that we've heard about, the millennials? I said, too young. They don't know who you are. And he said, what can we do? And I said, you can't. It's too late. I said, you waited too long. You fell asleep. Their sales went from, and they were privately held, $8 billion company operating, and it was domestic production. Their sales in 3 years went to 2.75.
Oh, a huge drop.
Yeah, well, that's what happens, George, when you fall asleep and you don't count people.
What could they have done, Ken, had they realized that the market's share of people was going to be smaller? What could they have done?
Well, what they could have done is, and I said, listen, if you had come to me, if you called me a few years ago, I would have told you to go after Gen Y and go after kids' clothes. And so you would have changed your demo. You would have gone down to maybe 8 to 20 or something. I said, and then you would have sold a ton of clothes. I said, but what's going to happen now is your sales are just going to erase. And they did.
Yeah.
And I'm not a soothsayer. It's just that when the market falls like that, that's what happens. And I had already, I had already experienced American Honda.
Yeah, you had gone through that.
I knew what was going to happen to them. They were just a little bit later than us.
How much time do you have before you can adjust, before you have to make that change?
It's years. It's normally 2 or 3 years anyway.
Well, that's not bad.
No, it's not.
If you're sharp enough to realize what's going on.
You want another one?
Yeah.
Here's a good one. Here's one you'll remember because you're a boomer. You're familiar with the automobile, the Mustang.
Yes, my first car, 1968.
Really? Yeah. I'm cool. See, I have a 1965 K Coupe. I'm my brother and I collect them.
I wish I still had mine. My God.
Yeah. No. Well, here's the deal. 1960. Imagine yourself 1960, and you're Lee Iacocca, and you work for Ford, and you're down on Woodward Avenue in Detroit. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with Detroit.
I was born in Detroit, Kenny.
Yeah, well, you know Woodward Avenue. Then it's where the kids sell the hot rodders hot ride.
Yep, sure
they drive up and down. They cruise. So he goes down to Woodward Avenue, and he's looking at the cars the kids are building for themselves. And they're building, a 32 Ford Deuce Coupes and, lightweight, two-door, powerful cars that are fun to drive. That's
mm-hmm.
what he said. He said, kids are building lightweight, two-door, powerful cars that are fun to drive, and Detroit is building winged sleds. These giant 6,000-pound cars. He said, there's a total disconnect here. He said, look at the number of the baby boomers. He was a genius, incidentally. But he screwed up, and I'll tell you where he screwed up. He said, we need to build a car for them. So in 1964 and a half, they came out with the first Mustang. And model year 1964 and all of 1965 model year would have run from September 64 to August of 65. That would have been the model year.
Mm-hmm.
They anticipated. He would have been a hero if he sold 100,000 units. You know how many he sold?
How many?
700,000.
Wow.
So he was a hero. You know what he could have sold? For every car, for every Mustang that sold, there were 10 buyers. The cars would be shipped to the dealers and they would evaporate. He did not anticipate the consumption level of the baby boomers, because baby boomers don't.
So he did. Consume. He couldn't make enough.
Physically couldn't make them fast enough. They threw these cars together. My car, I've got a 1965, and none of the seams match. And I was told by a judge at a car show, "Don't change that. That's how they were built." And so.
Huh.
Had
he anticipated that and tooled up for it, he would have made a fortune.
Ford would be the biggest car manufacturer on the planet.
My gosh.
Yeah, hands down.
All right, now somebody like Tesla, are they looking at marketing in order to sell these Tesla electric cars?
I hope they are. They haven't called me.
They haven't called you yet.
No, I like the car. I like the concept. I don't think.
What age demographic would buy that car? Because one, you got to have some money. It's not cheap.
Yeah, and it's not practical.
And it's not practical.
Even though it's a nice idea, and when I visit my brother out in Los Angeles, I marvel. He lives in Hermosa Beach at the number of Teslas that are sitting in garages.
Oh, I know it. I know it.
Yeah, it blows me away. So I don't know. I don't know. I haven't thought about Tesla. I don't know who they're after.
So a lot of this has to do with population shifts and growth.
Yep.
And when do you factor in what they can afford to buy, even though you might have a big pool of people? If they're not working or making money, they're not going to buy your product. So how do you factor that in?
Well, that's one of the what you, for every product, George, for every product there's what they call a best customer. And there's research done on best customer. So if you sold a widget and your widget was unique, there would be research done on a particular category that would tell you who your best customer is. And in the book, it's actually called Best Customer. And you can see who your customer is and then take a look at the census data or buy my book and take a look at the charts and graphs and say, okay, well, I know I'm going to sell my product to people that are 30 to 40.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to sell it to women. And so I need to know if there's a crop of women that are coming along in their 20s that are going to buy my product. And you'll find out that you're going to be fine.
I love that. There's a science to this, isn't there?
Well, you know what? And there's a science to it, but it's not even algebra. It's math. Large groups of people consume more than small groups of people.
So, at what point where you said that housing is going to spike and really go crazy, when is that going to start? Can you predict the date?
Yeah. As we speak, there's no inventory, and so it's. I just spoke in Virginia. They can't build apartment buildings fast enough in Virginia. Literally, cannot build them fast enough because of the crop of new gen wives.
Yeah, I'm out here in LA, and they're building apartments like crazy all over the place.
Yeah, can't build them fast enough.
Now, does that mean we're not going to have another housing bubble burst like we did in 2008?
Yeah, maybe in 20 years. I'll be dead. I won't care.
We'll pull you up.
Yeah, I don't foresee it. The bubble burst when the supply was bigger than the demand. What we have now is exactly the opposite of that.
Can you use these numbers, these demographics, to predict wars and things like that too? Because they seem to go in cycles.
I could tell you a few things that are happening. Let me tell you about North Korea.
All right. Yes.
And China.
Okay.
Okay. Well, China's got a problem. China's got a very, very big problem, and that is their economy's going to tank.
They don't know that.
Yes, they do.
They do?
Sure they do. Yeah, Xi Jinping knows that. He inherited a very, very corrupt China from Hu Jintao, and he's trying desperately to get the money back from all the people that stole it, which is why you're seeing a huge exodus from China to the rest of the world, and the lion's share of them are coming to the United States.
These are the people who stole the money. Right.
Yeah. People are stolen. People are. Listen, if you wanted to pinpoint a single problem in the world, the single biggest problem in the world, it's not wars. It's corruption.
Corruption and greed.
Yeah, corruption and greed. Yeah. And so, which is why you have a country run at our border, like Mexico, that has 110 million people, and half of them are below poverty.
Yeah.
Why? Because most of the wealth is getting siphoned off. But here's what's happening in China. China in 1979 gets visited by Henry Kissinger, among others, but he was very influential. And he persuades their high command at that time.
Chou En-lai at the time, wasn't it?
I'm not sure, but I believe you're correct. He said, listen, the Western world's not going to take you seriously unless you control your population, because you're producing, you know, 4 or 5 kids per couple, and your population is growing exponentially. So do something. So they go to a one-child-only policy. Well, that was the one-child-only policy from a short-term standpoint had some real benefits. One, it's what they call a demographic dividend. If you only have one child, you only have to educate, feed, clothe, and care for one child.
That's right.
And chances are both parents can work. And so that increased their labor force and reduced their outflow per capita. So their economy grew like crazy. The problem is, if you look at folks that are like 37, 38 years old right now and under, China is missing 500 million people that weren't born. Well, there's a critical mass of people that are necessary to run a country, and it's called the heavy lifters, the people that pay tax to take care of the elderly, take care of the young, and they don't have Social Security in China. So what Xi Jinping is looking at right now is under 37 years old. He has no consumers, he has no taxpayers, and he has no labor.
Oh, boy.
But it benefited them dramatically for the last 37 years.
But now they're gone.
It's time to pay the piper. So he's trying to make friends with the United States. Why? Because he knows he's in trouble. He was here. Here he is talking to Trump. He and his wife come here. I mean, why that wasn't more monumental, I don't know. I really don't know. So what does that have to do with war? Well, first of all, whenever a country is in trouble economically, they saber rattle. And he's doing that over the South China Sea and other places. But his biggest ace in the hole is a problem he created, or China created, called North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
North Korea has a GDP, gross domestic product, the value of every single thing they make, product and service, of $12 billion. Donald Trump has a bigger GDP than North Korea.
By himself.
By himself.
Yeah.
So what we're dealing with here is you have North Korea, you have Kim Jong-un, you have all of his followers who are deathly afraid of falling asleep in one of his speeches, or he'll shoot him with a
bang. Or they won't wake up, that's right.
Yeah, they won't wake up. Why does he exist? Well, he exists to be a problem. And so what China has with North Korea is a problem that they created that they can solve in exchange for something else, like the friendship of the United States, the help from the United States,
mm-hmm.
the not taking away the manufacturing jobs from China by the United States, which we're capable of doing now, a whole bunch of things. And in exchange, he's going to solve the North Korean problem. You know, when they pull those missiles, and he just shot another
they
one.
They just shot another
one,
that's right.
When they pull them out of the Sea of Japan, guess where they're made?
China.
They're Chinese missiles. This kid doesn't know how to make missiles.
I've always wondered about that. In a country that has a poor economy, where they get the money to make missiles, that's an interesting fact. China's helping them. We're going to come back with more, Ken, in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, welcome back to our Memorial Night program. George Norrie with you next hour. We'll open up the phone lines, give you an opportunity to chat with Kenneth Grundback as we talk about demographics. Fascinating. Fascinating indeed. Welcome back, Ken Grundback with us, Upside. So let's get back to China. So you think they're playing this little leverage game with North Korea?
Yep.
Well, you may be very right.
North Korea is a bargaining chip. So and why are they bargaining? Because demographically, China shot itself in the foot and blew its foot off.
Would you eliminate the one child per family rule that they have?
They already did.
Oh, they have?
Yeah, about 2 or 3 years ago, they went to a two-child-only policy. But that once you tamper with nature like that, and that's only part of their problem. Once you tamper with nature, you have a hole in your population, and then you go to a two-child-only policy, then you have a whole new crop of kids. So what they're going to have, literally, is a huge crop of elderly people, maybe even close to 1 billion, and then a crop of new young people, both of which need to be cared for, and no taxpayers in between to care for them.
Mm-hmm. A mess.
So it's like cooked, and that's only part of their problem. If you looked at a typical Chinese family today under the one-child-only policy, you have four grandparents, two parents, and one child, and the child's gender is male. Because that's what they favor. They favor males because they will take care of the elderly. But China has 90 million men under the age of 37 that have no prospect of marrying because there are no female counterparts.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So
how about that?
What would you have done with American Honda, knowing what you know now, knowing that their market size was shriveling up? What if anything, could you do? Would you have changed the products? Would you have come up with different kind of motorcycles? I mean, what was available?
You know, that's a good question, and I've never really given that much thought. I know what products did survive, and that was, you know, their home care products like lawnmowers and so forth.
Snowblowers.
Their automobiles certainly, you know, took off. But I don't know that I would have had a solution other than to tell my dealers that if they could, become Harley dealers.
Quickly.
Because Harley did very well for, 20, 25 years. But now the bloom is off the rose. I tell folks now, you want to sell your Harley.
To me, and I'm not a motorcyclist, but to me, Harley would also skew a little older demographically.
Oh, much. And that was the idea. It appealed to an older buyer who didn't care about performance, who cared more about appearance.
Appearance, and he had the money to buy it.
Yeah, and
she.
Things were ridiculously expensive, and they were stone slow. They leaked oil. What you have now, the baby boomers had drove Harley sales. And a problem is that when baby boomers come up to a light with this this heavy piece of equipment between their legs, they can't hold it up. so now there's a whole trend towards three-wheelers.
That's right.
Reverse and parking brakes.
Interesting take on all of this.
Oh, yeah.
The demographic I haven't talked to you about yet is the mortality rate. Are more people dying than being born on this planet?
No.
Because we seem to always keep going up higher and higher with people.
The population of the Earth right now is about 7 billion.
And they're talking about 9 billion.
Yeah, people may talk about it, but it depends on who's doing the talking because they have to understand what's going to happen. But by about 2050, 2060, the population of the Earth will probably go to about 10 or 12 billion, but then it will begin to recede. And it will recede because we're just simply not having replacement level fertility it's dropping, and there are very, very few parts of the world now that have replacement level fertility, and that's like 2.2 kids per couple.
So in some areas, more people are dying than coming in, basically.
Yeah, not necessarily, but yeah, that there would be some limited areas. A very interesting phenomenon is going to happen in Africa. Africa's population is currently about a billion, sub-Saharan Africa. That's where most of the people are. There's about a billion people, 35 countries. And their fertility in sub-Saharan Africa is, you know, 5 and 6 kids per couple.
Gosh.
But they don't live. There's a high infant mortality and the death before 5 years old. And men in Africa, the ones that live, tend to make it to about 40. Women make it to about 50, and that's the end of it. So what's going to happen in Africa is, as Africa receives technology, as Africa receives education and health care, they're going to keep their population alive. And the population by 2050, 2060 in Africa will be 4 billion. It'll go up 300%. And so Africa is going to be a very, very interesting place.
Is it going to be a great market for product, or is it going to be a problem?
The answer to that is yes. It's going to be a great Are they going to consume products? Absolutely. Will they have? And I guess this all depends on their on the education level, and how trained they will be. Right now, the people that have the most interest in Africa are the Chinese, and they're trading infrastructure for mineral rights. And so, I told you earlier in the show that crime is committed by men, and it's committed by men 15 to 30. Well, Africa, all things being equal, are going to have, they could have as many as a billion people in that category. So is that going to be a dangerous place? I think Africa is going to be a very, very
dangerous place.
That's
an interesting take.
Yeah. Right now in Africa, it's South Africa. I have friends that were going to South Africa, and I warned them. I said, you go into South Africa, and he said, yep. I said, it's not if you will be mugged, it's when. I said, so please stay inside, go where things are supervised. I said, it's a dangerous place.
Facebook wiped out MySpace. At one point, MySpace was the social network, and then it just got blown away. What, did demographics do that to it?
You know, I really can't answer that, George. I don't know. I know that populations are fickle, and the driving force for social media is our young people, and they change their minds quickly. I don't know. I really can't answer that. I don't know.
I mean, if you were like Apple, would you be concerned, or would you be ecstatic about the future of selling more smartphones?
Well, they're gonna. I don't think that demand is going to go away. But I will tell you this. I don't think that the technological breakthroughs that we have seen in phones are going to be as impressive as the technological breakthroughs that we're going to see in healthcare. So if I was Apple or if I was somebody in technology, I'd be looking at different, I'd be thinking outside of the box. Don't get trapped in phones.
Well, you know, you talk about healthcare. We were just talking about digital cyber doc, where people call their doctors and get a hold of them instantly, digitally, instead of the old days going into the office, which you have to do in some cases, of course. But that's new technology, and it's genius, I think.
It's going beyond that. I'll tell you a couple things that I know about only because I have the privilege of addressing these people. Scientists are telling me about single-dose medicine, and that is they once they get approval on the medicines that are in the pipeline to get approved. Is that FDA? Yeah, I believe so.
FDA, yeah.
Yeah, they're saying you'll be able to, if you have cancer, they'll be able to extract enough information from you, your DNA and so forth, through your blood, and then concoct a single-dose medicine that will cost you $30,000, $40,000 for a single dose that will cure your cancer. And there'd be no side effects. And they said, they assured me that they said, Ken, we're looking at living human beings living to 120 routinely in 20 or 30 years. And I think I really don't care about that, but you know that is exciting in a way.
Well, if you were 90 and you came down with that kind of disease, that horrid disease, would you get a shot to let you live even longer?
Well, not if I was 90 and old and decrepit, but because I asked them that. I said, listen, what's the benefit of living to 120 if you're doing it from a hospital bed? And they said, you won't be in a hospital bed. You'll be playing golf. And I said, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, but what happens to things like Social Security? They can't afford to keep paying people who live that long.
Well, you better start cranking out some kids that pay in.
That's right. And you better have some jobs for those kids.
That's precisely correct. Well, that's exactly what the EU has not done. Do you realize that the EU across the board, with I think the possible exception of Poland, is not having kids. Didn't have kids. Didn't have a labor force. They had to suck in, they needed labor. So where'd they get their labor off? In North Africa. So they invited a culture to come into the EU that's totally antithetical to them. And, you know, it's oil and water, Muslim culture and Western culture, and now they've got a huge problem, a huge problem. So you're going to see, actually, because they didn't have kids, you're going to see a massive bailout in of especially Western women who are going to bring their men with them out of the EU. And where are they going to go? They're going to come here.
You're still doing a lot of marketing through your company, KGC, right?
No, actually, we do research, and we do marketing in the sense that, you know, we advise other people, but we're not an advertising agency any longer.
Okay, but I do, but you do help with demographics and marketing for companies.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. We literally, if people hire us who want to know what their future is, demographic future is, and we do extensive research for sectors, categories, and individual products.
What would you, okay, let me throw some products your way. How would you advise these kinds of companies? A company that is making, let's say, cereal, okay? I mean, is there anything demographically about that?
Sure. There's, you know, what you would look at is who's the best product for cereal. And half of cereal is heavy sugar stuff, so it'd be kids. Well, that's all going to change. One, you know, right now our production of kids in the United States is good. It's not as good as it's going to be, and it's not as good as it was. It's going to get a lot better, but we're not going to produce large numbers of children probably for another 4 or 5 years. So,
what will make it happen in 4 or 5 years? Why will it pick up?
Because the number of parents is going to get larger.
All right. So it's
Gen
a
Y is a monster generation, and they're not parents yet.
Okay.
But they're right on the threshold of doing that.
And once they are,
we think they could have 3 kids,
which is pretty high, isn't it?
Well, that would be wonderful. Yeah, it'd be absolutely incredible. It'd be and just let me throw this in because I know there's some people out there saying, "Well, the Earth, you know, what are you talking about here?
Can we sustain this?" Right.
Yeah, aren't you concerned that the Earth is not going to be able to handle this population? If you wanted to have, George, if you wanted to have a party and you wanted to have 7 billion of your closest friends go to a party at your house or wherever you are, and you wanted to give all 7 billion of your friends 6 square feet so they could dance at your party, you know what state you could have your party in? Rhode Island. We don't have a space problem.
It's the smallest state.
Yeah.
It's dinky.
We can fit, but the Earth can sustain a much, much larger population than we have right now and not even feel it.
What about food?
We produce enough food to feed 14 billion people a day, and we throw half of it away. The problem with food is getting the food to the people that are hungry.
Right.
And there's a billion people that are starving, but we can't get it to them because of their corrupt governments. They sell it. What, if you give them the food, they sell it.
What do you, because you're bullish for the United States, you're very happy about it, saying the best days are ahead. What could screw this all up? Wars?
Yeah. Wars or famine, or, you know, if somebody managed to get a...
Or a natural disaster, an asteroid hits us or something?
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I can't help you there.
That you can't predict.
No. There's nothing they can do about that. What can screw this up? I tell folks, and they say, because I've been asked that in different ways, and they said, you know, if I'm a business that is going to sell, you know, I'm in the healthcare business. We know something is going to happen to healthcare here very shortly, and that is the baby boomers, the largest generation ever to consume healthcare, is currently 53 to 72. At 75, your body breaks, and you consume, you begin to consume healthcare at a level that you've not consumed before. So once the largest generation ever consume healthcare hits 75, it's going to drive healthcare through the roof. So I tell folks that are in healthcare, in you know, supplying healthcare for a profit, you could be an idiot and make money because the business is going to be so good. So you can make a mistake and still do really
and
well,
still
just
succeed.
Like Lee Iacocca did.
Yeah.
You can make a mistake, sell a bad product, and really do very well.
Interesting take. If you had a company as a client, and you do, what's the main thing they need to know right now?
Technology. I was speaking in northern Michigan to Michigan bankers.
Mm-hmm.
And after I spoke, a guy from Homeland Security went on, a really, really bright kid. And he asked the bankers, and I'm looking at a bunch of gray suits, a room full, a sea of them. And he said, how many people here are worried about being hacked? And all the hands went up, and he looked at him, and he said, I'm sorry to tell you this, but you've already been hacked. And everybody went white. And he said, so he said, the hackers have everything. It's just a matter of time before they get to you. He said, they have something that just such a vast quantity of information. It's just a matter of time before they get to you. So he said, here's what I'm going to advise. Invest in the best IT person, man or woman, that you could possibly afford.
Mm-hmm.
And when that person comes to you and wants a couple hundred grand or a couple million, whatever your scale is,
give it to them.
Give it to them. Don't think about it. Give it to them, because you're just going to stay just a little bit ahead of the hackers. So that's my advice to folks. I said, right now, hire Gen Y, because they eat, sleep, and drink in the cyber world. They will tell you about your new market, but invest in technology blindly.
All right, Ken, we're going to come back with the final hour here on Coast to Coast AM, and we're going to take phone calls. So questions for the author of Upside right here on Coast to Coast AM.